Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll talk about the Somali presidential election. And with us tonight is my colleague, Haruna Maruf. Harun is the senior editor of the VOA Somali service. Good afternoon, Haruna, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Douglas. I'm glad to be with you.
Thank you very much. We're also joined by Mohamed Ademo. Mohamed is a co-founder and editor at opry.com, and also joined us by phone. Welcome to the show, Mohamed.
Thank you for having me, Douglas. Hello, Harun. How are you?
I'm fine, Mohamed. You are also a good friend, a very good channel.
Oh, that's very good. Well, and, gentlemen,
we follow each other on social media.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
So, gentlemen, as I said, our topic tonight, we're talking about the Somali presidential election and what it means in the region. As our listeners may know, former Prime Minister Mohamed Abdallah Mohamed is the new president of Somalia. The ex-premier emerged the winner in the second round of voting, but did not garner the two-thirds votes required to clinch the presidency. However, the incumbent Hassan Sheikh Mohamud conceded defeat, eliminating the need for the third round, for which a simple majority would have seen the winner declared president. The 55-year-old who holds a Somali and U.S. citizenship was sworn in as president immediately after Mr. Mohamud dropped out of the contest. Let me start with Harun. Were you surprised that the incumbent president lost?
No, really. I was not surprised. Although he invested a lot of energy, a lot of time shaping the process, and he declared, you know, a few months ago that there will be no one person, one vote election. So we believed that the system favored him because he also helped set up the regional administrations who elected some of the MPs. So we believed that the system might help him, but eventually we did not surprise because the opposition candidates agreed that they're going to support each other if one of them competes against the incumbent in the final round. And that's what happened. After the first round, all the opposition MPs have given their support to the opposition candidate rather than the incumbent.
I see. Mohamed, some people find it interesting that in an African country, in an election where it's not one man, one vote, but members of parliament electing a president, the incumbent conceded defeat and things moved on.
No, I think it is remarkable. And it is even the more so when you consider where Somalia is in the Horn of Africa, surrounded by countries that don't have really a good record of peaceful transfer of power. You look up north, the biggest country, Ethiopia, they have not had such peaceful transfer of power. And then you have Eritrea up north. You have a dictator that refuses to hold even elections. And all of a sudden, you have this country that is trying to get back on its feet. And yes, the system is imperfect, and it is very unique in the sense as my colleague Harun just described. But nonetheless, it shows that the roots of democratic classes have been planted, and it is Farmajo's job now to build on that and sort of cement that progress. And I thought it was very remarkable that the outgoing president was gracious and conceded defeat almost as soon as it happened.
I see. Harun, what makes the new president so popular? It appears, judging from the crowds of ordinary people who poured in the streets of Mogadishu, and even the army, he seems to have some support in the army. What makes him tick?
Yeah, there's something unusual about him. He's just catching fire with ordinary people. And this dates back to late 2010, early 2011. He was briefly a prime minister, and during that period, he was carrying a message. You know, Somalia is destroyed, country, everything has to be started from the beginning. Mm. Al-Shabaab was on the doors fighting its government troops. They were a few kilometers away from the presidential palace. But this prime minister came with a message of hope and optimism, and primarily he started paying the salaries of the army. He also paid salaries of the government workers, the civil servants. He formed a very technocratic government, very small cabinet, and it's all about the connection with the people. He had a message of optimism that really Somalis can do on their own. He was calling foreign agencies, the UN agencies, to come to Mogadishu if they want to make a difference. And that resonated with the ordinary people, because before he said that, really, most of the agencies, most of the foreign humanitarian organizations were based in Nairobi. But he said, come to Mogadishu, feel what we feel, and see people in real time rather than macromanaging the situation from Nairobi. So that gave him a lot of really support. It created a bit of friction between him and the international community, but that's not something that Somalis, ordinary Somalis, are going to hold against him. And he's also known for being patriotic, for instance. Within the last hours, we learned that he changed he requested that all his bodyguards, all the people around him in terms of security, are going to be Somalis other than and not foreign troops. And that is very significant symbolism. And in a country like Somalia, where really people like symbolism, because there isn't a lot really that Somalis can extort from a government at this situation of the country after 20 years of civil strife. Corruption is rampant. Al-Shabaab is on the doors. I think they know, they're very realistic, and they believe that this president can give them that message, connect with them, and at least give the people hope.
I see. Mohamed, despite Haruna's point there that Farmajo has connection with the ordinary person in Somalia, Somalia still has troops composed of other countries in the country. Al-Shabaab still has some tracts of land they control. How do you see the neighborhood helping him succeed or maybe helping him fail?
I think Aaron will agree with me that the neighbors are a bit nervous, because Farmajo is a nationalist first and foremost, and I think his election is a signal that nationalism, sort of the populist trend of nationalist politicians coming to power, has just arrived in Somalia, and he wants Somalia to be self-sufficient, to be independent of the political power jockeying that goes on in the Horn of Africa region. So because of his independence, his support from the army, the potential that his election and his support also transcend clan and regional divide within the Somali society. In the fact that he is not trained in the system of the previous regime, and he has no clear or solid affiliation with powerful warlords. So I think because of all these things, in his U.S. connection, the fact that he connects with the ordinary Somali person, and because of really the goodwill and the optimism his election has sort of brought it to the country, the neighbors are nervous. But as far as what would happen in terms, you know, Somalia still needs help dislodging Al-Shabaab, and I think there is a lot of capacity building that needs to still take place. And as a country that is trying to really rebuild itself from years of ruin. So it really depends on how he will approach the regional dynamics and how much susceptible he will be to sort of the power balance that goes on in the Horn of Africa, how he approaches the Somalis, how he will approach the Kenyans, and Kenya also has elections that could change the calculus a little bit later in the year, or at least in the coming years. But generally, you've seen reform in some of the troop contributing countries, including Ethiopia, already pulling back a little bit. Others are talking about a deadline for withdrawal. All of that could mean creating more vacuum for Al-Shabaab to come back. But it really depends on how Farmajo navigates all of that and sort of take advantage of the opportunities without really losing the support of the ordinary Somalis who really like his independence.
I see. Haruna, would you like to add on that? Because Somalia is in a tough neighborhood. And as Mohamed points out, some of the countries, troop-contributing countries, some of them are in turmoil, like Burundi, Uganda is there. Kenya has been trying to play some sort of games. How do you see him navigating that situation?
Yeah, Mohamed is absolutely right. Farmajo is a nationalist, and he has some reservations about the role of some of the neighboring countries in Somalia. But as some experts who were speaking to within the last hours told us, Somalia is also in a very fragile situation, and he will need to be really very careful for the benefit of Somalia, not to take on big governments who already have troops in Somalia. And when I say that, for instance, a few days ago before the election, the Prime Minister of Ethiopia publicly supported the incumbent, Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, and he said his government was endorsing him. But that gave a wrong signal to a lot of MPs that Ethiopia was overly expanding support to Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, and maybe some of them interpreted that as endorsing someone on the MPs rather than them choosing. So a lot of MPs supported Farmajo just because of that speech by the Ethiopian Prime Minister. But Farmajo will also have to understand that Ethiopia has a lot of troops in Somalia. It has its own strategic interest. On the other hand, Kenya must be very pleased that Farmajo is a president. I say this because Farmajo is from Gede region. This is the region that borders Kenya. And we know what happened in January last year in El Ade, when Al-Shabaab attacked Kenyan military base. More than 140 Kenyan troops were killed. And Kenya at the time was claiming that the local population, the locals in Gede region, were not supporting Kenyan troops. And this is the chance for Kenya also to reach out those communities, because that's where their troops operate mainly. And I think the new president can help preach that. And so the Kenya will be very pleased. But in general, I think the international community must be very pleased, whatever that Somalis decide, whoever they choose, is the will of the Somali people. And the MPs were saying that because, you know, all the public opinions in Somalia before the election were pointing with preferring Farmajo to become the next president. But many people were doubting that because they thought that Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, the outgoing president, has a lot of support within the parliament. Mm. So it means that the MPs really had reflected the interest of the public. So this is a good, positive step in Somalia. But it's not always who we elect. A lot of Somali politicians say good things and they have good message, but it all comes down to transferring these messages into practical work and delivery of services on the ground, such as security, such as economic recovery, such as resettling the refugees who are coming back from Kenya. And now Somalia is one of the seven countries banned by the United States to have refugees from. It's another burden on the Somali government really to immediately pacify the country so that Somalis can believe in their country and rebuild their country.
I see. Well, let's take just a short break. We'll be back again to continue our discussion of the Somali presidential election.
Hello, Sawubona. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in this Sunday for a full hour of delicious African music. Discover and delight in urban and in traditional music from Mali, Nigeria, Kenya, Cameroon, Tanzania, Morocco, and Mozambique. This music mix is just finger-licking good. Don't miss it. This Sunday, 1500 and 2000 UTC, right here on Music Time in Africa. Yum!
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing the Somali presidential election and what it means for the region. Our panelists are my colleague, Harun Maruf, senior editor of the VOA Somali Service, and Mohamed Ademo, co-founder and editor at opry.com. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Maybe I'll throw this one to both of you. Both of you referred Farmajo as a nationalist, as a person who is concerned about his country, uniting it and having it develop. To what extent, I'll begin with you, Mohamed, to what extent does his interest collide with the international community or the neighbors who have a stake in the stability of Somalia?
I think it is clear that Farmajo has a vested interest in restoring stability to the country, rebuilding the country, the army, ensuring that the army is capable enough so that Somalia will not need sort of the African Union forces on the ground. And then also I think the election of Farmajo itself signals that Somalis are willing, or at least they appear ready and willing to give federalism a chance. The international community, particularly the United Nations and other donors, including until recently the United States, also have strategic interest in seeing a stable Somalia. It is close to the Gulf countries in Yemen, across the ocean, is in great deal of turmoil, and a lot of investment, bad and good, has gone into bringing Somalia to this stage. I think for all those reasons, there is certainly a lot that Farmajo shares with the international community in terms of seeing the country progress on the road that it is on now, toward more stable, hopefully democratic country in the region.
Haruna, do you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. However, the outgoing president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, he had six pillar policy when he came to power in 2012. These six pillar policies included stabilizing the country, economic recovery, social delivery, reconciliation, keeping the unity of the country, and so on. But his goals were very broad. They were not very specific. He was not focusing on one particular issue. One major achievement that he has made was helping create regional administrations in the country according to the constitution. Many people, I think, in the long run will give him credit for that. But on the other hand, his objectives and his goals were very broad. It was not very specific. Mogadishu security hasn't improved at all during these past 4 years. This president is main task should be, and the Somalis will judge on him how he approaches his goals. What are his agendas? Is he going to keep the power and the running of the country within the small group of friends or in a circle, or is he going to expand the power to the people? Is he going to delegate the administration? And one other important thing is, you know, next month is going to be 10 years since the African Union troops were in Somalia. That's a very long time. And Somalia's security really has not changed since then. So how is he going to change this trend? What is he going to do to rebuild the army and prepare them to take over from AMISOM? Because Uganda said it's going to pull out next year in 2018. If Uganda pulls out, other countries will very much likely follow, and that will leave Somalia in limbo, in a very dangerous situation. So he does not have a lot of time, but the sooner he starts revealing the army, the better. One other important thing is reconciliation. Although we have regional administrations and a government, still there are clan-based fightings in parts of the country, including Galkayo, including central Somalia, including northeastern Somalia, and including southwestern Somalia. So he needs really to exercise a policy that reaches out to the people, that reconciles the clanists and the localists from grassroots and grassroots level, and he needed to approach that. That will make it easier for the regions and even for his government to operate and expand to the countries, because Al-Shabaab exploits local frictions, local conflicts, and this was one of the regions that really helped with Al-Shabaab sustain its power in the countryside. He needs to not only to face Al-Shabaab militarily, but also to use soft power.
I see. Do you think, Harun, how will his dual citizenship play out in Somalia? In some African countries, of course, he would even have been disqualified. Now, in Somalia, is, I think, unique. That's okay. He can contest and become president. How does his American citizenship help him or hurt him?
It will not make much of a difference. You know, the Somali constitution does not bar anyone from becoming a president, anyone with a dual citizenship. Mm-hmm. And primarily they did that because most of the Somalis who are working in the country, who are in civil servants or in ministries or in government, people with skills, they are the people who came back from the diaspora. So if we really categorically say dual citizen people with foreign passports cannot hold a position, that's going to exclude an entire community, an entire very skilled workforce and leadership. So the people who are drafting the constitution realized that, and they said, we don't have a problem with someone with dual citizen to become a president or hold a position as long as he's ethnically a Somali. Mm-hmm. So the constitution does not have a problem with that. Also, there's an advantage for the Somali government to have someone with a foreign passport to hold a position, because they attend international conferences, they go very important meetings outside, they engage diplomatic engagement, and at this climate that we see this travel ban, it would be much easier for the Somali government to send someone with another passport. That will not take a lot of time to travel and attend these important meetings.
I see. Mohamed, I think furthermore, Farmajo, he was a diplomat at one time, I understand, and he will need a lot of those diplomatic skills to steer the country, because there's still terrorism, there's clan rivalry, the economy and the food insecurity, according to some aid workers. Some are worried that millions of Somalis will soon face a famine. So I think you'll need a lot of those skills to maneuver the international community.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Somalia is in a very unique position. And I think the web of interests that are really interlinked, not just regional, but the international interests and the U.S. has interest in counterterrorism and in other things. The European Union is interested in counterterrorism, but also interested in sort of finding ways to stem the flow of refugees going over to Europe. In the web of regional interests, when you see all of that in what he had to do, not only to get more aid and more support from the international community to rebuild the army, to find ways to really decentralize the system and empower the states and the regional states so that the federalism can take root. For all those reasons, he needs to work with all of them. He needs to work with the African Union. He needs to work with the Ethiopians. Despite his misgivings, which are, I think, absolutely right, Ethiopia is self-interested in its intervention in Somalia. But you know, it is a big challenge, right? I mean, you have a change in administration in the U.S., which could really alter things. And I know that the U.S. provides a great deal of support for the African forces on the ground. If the Trump administration decides to axe some of that aid or roll back and try to go at it unilaterally, he needs to navigate all that. And I think the diplomatic skills and just generally him being an academic and having spent decades in the U.S., studying and dealing with the Somali story, all of these things are helpful. But I think the challenge he faces are also just as formidable.
I see. Harun, last word. What do you think what he faces now is not an easy job?
Yeah, he faces a lot of challenge, no doubt about that. It's really the biggest question for everybody is how is on earth any leader, not just for much, not everybody, how on earth any leader is really going to turn around what's happening in Somalia, the insecurity, the corruption, the political dysfunction. This is a monumental task. What Farmaccio will need to do, number one, is how is he going to manage the expectations? People expect him really to do so much, achieve so much within such a short period. Also, a lot of actors, whether they are in Somalia or outside, will try to put him off track. They will try to manipulate his workings. And so how is he going to manage this? These are the major challenges, really, before he does anything. What kind of government is he going to choose? If he chooses a government with a lot of faces who already failed in their positions in previous government, who could not pacify Mogadishu, who could not confront attacks by Al-Shabaab, who could not manage their own ministries properly, if this happens again, people will lose interest. But if he does what he did during the 7 months he was in charge of the government, which was a new blood, a new method, new optimism, new faces, who are capable of delivering the services at this very difficult period, I think people will respond to him. Remember, in 2006, Islamic courts emerged in Mogadishu, and despite all the difficulties, by all the insecurity, they were able to turn it around simply because of the message and simply because of they created an optimism and they restored security, and everybody else responded to them. If he really exercises along those lines, and he asks his government to work for the people rather than for themselves, I think people will respond to him very positively. And he has the chance. It's all up to him now. He has the chance to formulate his own political faith. Because if he does not deliver, not only that he will lose the presidency. Somalia has never re-elected a president. It might also destroy his long-term political career. So it's up to him how is he going to manage that.
I see. Well, we're out of time. I was going to ask you briefly, does Al-Shabaab care who is in power? Just yes or no?
Well, it's a very hard question. I don't think they care who is in power. They have their own agenda, which does not really corroborate with the kind of government we know.
I see. Well, we're out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague Harun Maruf, senior editor of the VOA Somali Service, and Mohamed Ademo, co-founder and editor at Operate.com. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Mohamed.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight was Kwame Ofori, and our engineer was the amiable Sisk. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, wishing you all the best.